So continuing our exploration of the aggregates, another way to explore them or think about them is as processes of body and mind. And the Buddha really, I think, took this body-mind system as our terrain for exploration. And in some of the teachings he offered, there's an emphasis on bodily understanding bodily processes. And in this particular list, the list of the five aggregates, there's a real emphasis on mental processes. Because of the five aggregates, one of the processes is understood to be a bodily process, the form, you know, the relationship to form, that this connects to the physical area. The other four aggregates are mental processes, the process of feeling, the process of perceiving, the process of intending, and the process of knowing. And so it really does kind of slice the realm of our mental processes is the best word I can think of. I was trying to find another word. it slices the realm of our mental processes. It talks about how these mental processes work. And as Gil pointed out yesterday, one of the best ways, I think, to begin to understand these mental processes is in kind of contrast to the bodily process. The bodily process can be kind of obvious, and in some ways I think this is in the Four Foundations of Mindfulness. The Buddha starts with the foundation of the body, understanding the body, the experience of body. And as we get really familiar with that aggregate, with that set of experiences, we begin to kind of tease apart what body is and what mind is. In fact, in the Satipatthana Sutta, there's a phrase that's repeated for each of the foundations. In the first foundation, it said, one contemplates the body as a body. And that's repeated for each of the foundation. One contemplates feelings as feelings. One contemplates mind as mind. One contemplates dhammas as dhammas. And the commentaries say about this phrase, about this repetition in particular, I mean, what does it mean to contemplate the body as a body? There's various ways to understand it, but the one I'd like to explore right now is the commentary saying, I'll read this. This is a translation, of course. But the commentaries say that the repetition, one contemplates the body as a body, so that repetition, indicates precisely determining the object of experience and distinguishing it from other objects with which it might be confused. So that sounds maybe a little technical, but to me, what this is pointing to is recognizing the experience of body in and of itself, and beginning to, through that recognition, seeing, understanding what that direct experience is confused with. We actually confuse our experience of body with many other things. Yesterday, Gil went through that exploration around the hand, exploring thinking about the hand, thinking about what the hand does and what kind of hand it is and what you like or dislike around the hand, and then into the actual felt sense of hand. And so this is one of the things, one of the ways, in fact, that we kind of conflate or confuse experience. Concepts about experience, in particular, you know, this is somewhat easier to recognize with the body, that in that exploration of hand, when we're relating to the hand through the concept of hand. And I don't know if any of you noticed this so much yesterday, but in relating through the concept of hand, there's a kind of a distancing from the actual direct experience of hand. And so, you know, we relate to the experience through the concept and are confusing it with the actual bodily experience. This kind of thing happens a lot. In this case, this is the process of perception being conflated and mixed up with the process of body. And so as we explore the aggregates, get familiar with these different processes, the mental processes, and explore the physical realm, we begin to understand just how that confusion happens. And that very understanding begins to help us to tease apart these processes and again see the interweaving, the interconnection of how they influence each other, how all of these processes feed into each other. And this is particularly maybe somewhat easier to see around the realm of feeling tone, which is the area that we're going to be exploring this evening, this afternoon. And so looking at the feeling tone process, as well as the feeling, the experience of feeling tone. Again, we have been talking about the aggregates both expressing and describing the experiences that we have. So there is experience in our, we do have experience of things being pleasant, unpleasant, or neither pleasant nor unpleasant, a neutral kind of feeling tone. And that is what we could call the object or the experience of feeling tone. And then there's the process by which we feel. So for each of these, for each of these aggregates, there's the understanding that they are processes, as well as the actual experience of what our body mind experience is made up of. And so this feeling tone, whether experience is pleasant, unpleasant, or neither pleasant nor unpleasant, is a very natural result of our sensory apparatus contacting the world. It's an aspect of our experience that that's easy to overlook in a way. And it's easy to consciously overlook. We are very oriented around feeling tone, at a kind of a subconscious level almost, because so much of our lives are oriented around finding ways to increase pleasant feeling and decrease unpleasant feeling. It's almost like we're these engines of the Pali term for feeling tone is vedana. It's like we're these vedana engines. We are seeking to maximize pleasant and minimize unpleasant. And this can be understood at a very organic level, a very natural. It's a very natural response. All creatures will move towards pleasant experience and away from unpleasant experience. That it's kind of a part of our homeostasis mechanism in a way. And so much of our, the way we navigate the world, the way we live our lives, is oriented around this feeling tone without our being very conscious of being oriented around feeling tone. We kind of automatically react to pleasant by wanting it, wanting to get more of it, holding on to it. We kind of automatically react to unpleasant by pushing it away, trying to control or fix or change. And yet we aren't so consciously aware of the pleasant or unpleasant experience itself. Every single experience we have has this component of feeling tone to it. And very much our orientation at some level is around the feeling tone. We think perhaps in having some food that we really appreciate. I really appreciated the mixture of the beans with the salsa and the cheese and the sour cream. That was very pleasant for me. And yet, you know, while I was eating it, I was kind of into, as I reflect now on my meals, I was kind of, you know, into the enjoyment of it and appreciating the beans and the mixture of everything. But I wasn't consciously recognizing pleasant Vedana is happening. So it's a part of every experience, but it's often overlooked because we are so quick to respond and react to it. In fact, this feeling tone, this quality of pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, is kind of the springboard from which reactivity is created. And hopefully I'll have a chance a little later to talk more about that process. So feeling tone itself, I talk a little bit more about the feeling tone itself. I said earlier that these aggregates, there's four mental aggregates, and feeling tone is a mental aggregate. It's understood to be a mental process. It's understood to be a mental phenomenon. The pleasant, unpleasant, neutral aspect of experience is understood to be a mental phenomenon. Now, that may be easier to see around mental experience. In a way, as I said a moment ago, every single experience we have has this component of feeling tone. So all of our physical contact, all of the contact with our body, with our the sights, sounds, smells, tastes, touches, all has this aspect of feeling tone. But also every contact with our mind, every experience of our mind, emotions, moods, thoughts, all also have this feeling tone. And so it's probably pretty straightforward to recognize that something like happiness would be a mental feeling of pleasant. Something like sadness or anger probably has the mental feeling of unpleasant. But how do we understand the feeling tone associated with our physical body as a mental experience? This is a little harder to understand in a way, because it feels so directly, especially the touch sense. You know, we cut ourselves with a knife and it's like, you know, it's like it's the body that's painful. You know, that's what it feels like, right? It feels like it's the body that's painful. We burn ourselves. We touch something hot. It's like it's the body that's painful. And yet, science justifies the Buddha again. Here's a study about the perception of pain. This was done by Siri Leknes, a psychologist at the University of Oslo in Norway. And the study says, to see how people perceived pain, Leknes and her colleagues hooked 16 participants up to a device that applied variable levels of painful heat to their arms. At the same time, researchers measured their brain activity using magnetic resonance imaging scans. In the first scenario, participants experienced a series of moderately painful stimulus, about as painful as grasping a slightly too hot cup of coffee, or no pain. That's the first scenario. They're touching, you know, they're getting contacted with a moderate pain or no pain. In the second scenario, they either experience a moderate pain or an intense pain. And on a screen, in the second scenario, it says, maybe it's both. On a screen, the participants could see what type of pain was coming up next in the series. So they were aware. You're going to get a moderate pain, you're going to get a strong pain, you're going to get no pain. In the first scenario, the participants rated the moderate pain as unpleasant. No great surprise. But interestingly, in the second scenario, participants rated the moderate pain as pleasurable, when the alternative was the intense pain. During the moderate stimulus in the second setups, participants' brain activity also showed less activation in the pain region of the brain. So it wasn't just about the report. It was about how the brain perceived this experience. Showed less activation in the pain region of the brain stem, which is where apparently we experience pleasant, unpleasant, and more activation in a region in the middle of the frontal lobes that's associated with pain relief and pleasure. The likely explanation, according to the researcher, is that the subjects were prepared for the worst and thus felt relieved when they realized the pain was not going to be as bad as they feared. In other words, a sense of relief can be powerful enough to turn such an obviously negative experience as pain into a sensation that is comfortable or even enjoyable. Pain, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, even of our physical experience, depends on context, depends on expectation, depends on view, is intimately tied with these other aggregates, depends on perception somewhat. And so there is a real weaving of these aggregates. And the pain, the painful, pleasant experience itself is a mental phenomenon that is mediated by these other aggregates. So the teachings of the Buddha really point to, over and over again, it's over and over in the suttas, how important it is to be mindful of feeling tone. Partly because it's a universal aspect of our experience, with every experience feeling tone arises, but also because it is that springboard. It is the place where we leap into reactivity, because we are so oriented around wanting to find ways to maximize pleasant and minimize unpleasant. And so when there is no awareness and our habitual processes are at work, typically what happens with feeling tone is that when a pleasant experience arises, our habitual response is to go towards it, to like it, to want it, to want more of it. When an unpleasant experience arises, our habitual response is to not like it, to not want it, to want to get rid of it, to push it away. And that habitual response leads from the feeling tone itself through reactivity, the mental formation aggregate, So very quickly we move from the just the bare experience of the feeling into reaction. And that happens when we're in that habitual mode. And that habitual mode is shot through with not understanding, with delusion, with ignorance around how these processes work. In our habitual mode, it seems impossible that something unpleasant would not be something we'd want to get rid of. In our habitual mode, it's like something pleasant and liking it, how can we separate those? With mindfulness, we start to recognize that this is a process. We start to see that the feeling tone is distinct from liking or not liking. The feeling tone is distinct from wanting to hold on to it or wanting to get rid of it. And through that, the mind begins to recognize that, you know, the aggregates are all processes of mind. And so the aggregates of reactivity in the volitional formations aggregate, they are conditioned by both the feeling tone and unawareness. When we are not aware, when we're in that habitual mode, the feeling tone tends to condition the liking, the wanting, the holding, the needing. And so when there is the mindfulness is present and there's the possibility of wisdom being present, this recognition of feeling tone can short circuit the habitual movement to reactivity from feeling tone. And so we see actually that the movement from feeling into reactivity is optional. And that movement from feeling to reactivity is the birth of our struggles. Because we also see, as we bring mindfulness to the feeling tone directly, that simply feeling a pleasant feeling or simply feeling an unpleasant feeling is not a problem. It's quite remarkable, actually, as we really start to investigate our experience at this level of how much of what we call pain, there is some aspect of what we call pain being perhaps an unpleasant experience, an unpleasant physical experience, for example. On one retreat, I was sitting with I was sitting cross-legged, and the ankle bone was digging into the floor over a period of time, and I was feeling very strong sensation, very strong physical unpleasant sensation, and there was no reactivity in the mind, and it was not experienced as pain. It was experienced as very strong, unpleasant sensation. That was a real lesson for me about what we actually call pain, is largely a mental experience. It's extra stuff going on. It's the reactivity to the unpleasant experience. The reactivity to the unpleasant experience that makes up most of what we call pain. And so this process from leading from feeling into the reactivity, it's very familiar. And as we start to observe our minds, it's really, it happens all over the place. And so we really get to taste it and see it over and over again. And sometimes it feels like it's happened so fast, the movement from, oh, something's unpleasant, to kind of pulling away from it. It feels like it's hardwired. But it's true that in some creatures, like single-celled amoebas perhaps, that movement away from unpleasant stimulus is kind of a hardwired response. In our nervous systems, it is not hardwired. We actually have the possibility of knowing that something is unpleasant and not reacting to it. And so when wisdom is present, when mindfulness is present, that's where the possibility arises for feeling to simply be feeling. We experience a pleasant feeling, it's a pleasant feeling. We experience an unpleasant feeling, it's an unpleasant feeling. It doesn't lead onward to all of the reactivity. And so this is a way, this kind of highlights the importance of meeting feeling with mindfulness, with wisdom, with concentration, with stability of mind. And that will that supports our disentangling from the reactivity around feeling. This is another way in which yesterday Gil was talking about how we can use the aggregates in our favor, in our service, as we meditate. Mindfulness and wisdom are volitional formations. They are in the experience of mindfulness. The arising of wisdom are processes of mind that are within the realm of volitional formation. And so rather than having the habitual processes of volitional formation of reactivity running, we begin to cultivate the conditions for mindfulness and wisdom. And this skillful use of the aggregates begins to unlink us from so much of the reactivity and suffering that we experience. So getting familiar with feeling tone is a really helpful exploration. Again, it's not necessarily something that we're attuned to in our everyday lives until somebody points it out to us and says, hey, you know, this part of our experience, this is really helpful to pay attention to. And this is what the teachings in the suttas do. It really highlights. Really helpful to pay attention to the feeling tone over and over again. This is highlighted as a really helpful arena for mindfulness. And in my experience, in my exploration of feeling tone, probably the easiest place to start getting familiar with it is in the realm of the bodily, that the feeling tone associated with bodily sensations. So we talked about that being a mental experience, and yet there's a very clear, you know, the skin, in fact, in particular, is really highly attuned. The nerves in the skin are highly attuned to pleasant and unpleasant. Very sensitized to that. In fact, I understand that when the body loses its, that there's an illness called Hansen's disease, used to be called leprosy, and the kind of the reason why this bodies began to be eaten away was because they lost the sensitivity to pleasant and unpleasant in their skin. So that it's a very important function of our bodies to be very attuned to pleasant and unpleasant in particular. And so we can explore the within our physical sensations, as Gil was exploring yesterday, last night, and this morning, there are the actual kind of inner feelings of living in the body, being in the body, the feelings, the sensations, I'll say, the sensations of, for instance, pressure, tingling, pulsing, vibration, heat, coolness, hardness, softness. So all of those are the body is also very attuned to that kind of experience. But another kind of right up close to that is this aspect of whether it's pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. And so certain experiences we can recognize. I mean, often we recognize something like an itch. You know, an itch is a great mindfulness object. It's often experienced as very unpleasant. But again, we often are thinking of it as an itch. We're relating to it as an itch and trying to decide what we should do about this itch. Should I sit here and like grin and bear it and grit my teeth and not move? Or should I just scratch the itch and it'll go away and I'll be done with? So we're relating to it as an itch more than just simply recognize, oh, this is an unpleasant sensation. Can I recognize this unpleasant sensation? So we see the unpleasantness of that. We can recognize the unpleasantness of bodily experience. And in seeing that, again, as we're pointing out how we can begin to recognize the tease apart all of these different aggregates. So there's the bodily experience of the itch. There's the feeling of unpleasantness. And then there's the mind, which is being driven nuts by the itch. Which is like trying to decide what to do. Should I scratch? Should I not scratch? Gritting our teeth. So there's that part too. That's mental formation. There's also the perception. There's the perception of, oh, this is an itch. So they're all of these aggregates are working. Now, if we can begin to come in and recognize, okay, there's the itch, and there's the feeling, the unpleasant experience. What I've seen for myself, like in exploring an itch, you know, an itch is a really fantastic meditation object. Nobody's ever died of an itch, as far as I know. So, you know, it's not like a knee pain where you're afraid your knee's going to fall off, you're going to get a torn cartilage or something. You know, it's just like an itch. You know, it's nothing. You know, it's just driving you nuts. So you can be curious about watching it. And you know, what I've seen is that it's like this one point, it's like a tiny little area, and it goes zzz, and then it stops. And it goes zzz, and then it stops. And so there's that, it's like an intense, unpleasant buzz, and then it stops. And if you're kind of in there with it, exploring the unpleasantness of it and the actual experience of it, you see it coming and going. And then you also see the reactivity as something else. You see the reactivity of, I've got to stop this. I got to get rid of this. And then we see how they interweave, how much the reactivity is exacerbating the zzz. It's just a little zzz. That's all it is. And not only that, it goes away half the time. It's kind of interesting, you know, to be there when it goes away. So that kind of exploration, you come in and explore in the body this unpleasant, pleasant, neutral quality. So, you know, we explore the unpleasantness of bodily experience, of itch, of tightness, of pain, or the pleasantness of you know, if you're washing the dishes, you know, if it's been like 30 minutes since they put the dishwater out, it's like really pleasant, warm water in there. So, you know, there's the pleasantness of some of our experience and unpleasantness of some of our experience. And then there's a whole terrain of neutral that often we just don't even see. We're not attuned to neutral. We tend to be attuned to pleasant and unpleasant, and we miss neutral entirely. So, you know, we can explore this in daily activities. We can explore the pleasant, unpleasant quality. Eating's a great place to explore this. There's there's just this flow of pleasant, unpleasant. neutral in eating, in our yogi jobs. Again, you know, the body may get a little tired doing the dishwashing. So noticing that, there may be kind of the, you may bend over and stretch and have a feeling of pleasantness as a muscle gets worked out. So just kind of attuning yourself to the pleasant, unpleasant, neutral quality begins to help you to distinguish, again, teasing apart the feeling tone from the response or reaction to it. We can also start to get familiar with the feeling tone associated with mental states, because our moods, our emotions, also have a feeling tone associated with them. So fear, for example, often has an unpleasant quality to it. And some of our aversion to our emotional experience has to do with the feeling tone, some of our reactivity. One of the great skills we develop as meditators is to begin to be able to be okay when something feels uncomfortable. You know, we don't have to fix and change everything. And so that the feeling of uncomfortable is usually associated with something somewhat unpleasant. That uncomfortable feeling often, you know, somewhere in here, in the body, often there can be a kind of impact of, like, fear having such a bodily expression. There's the physical experience of the fear. Something feels off, something feels wrong. So there's that unpleasantness in here. And then there's often, so, you know, there's that unpleasant experience, but when we start to really look at that unpleasantness, often we recognize, wow, it's not that unpleasant. The actual, you know, feeling tone of the feeling of fear, you know, there's that little tightness in the stomach, and that's slightly unpleasant. There's contraction in the throat, that's slightly unpleasant. What is actually so unpleasant here? In my exploration of this kind of thing, one of the main experiences that the mind reacts to as unpleasant, that can be kind of out of our field of awareness, is the feeling of being out of control. I don't have control over this fear. I don't have control over these bodily sensations. For me, there was one time I was watching a really strong energetic experience in the body, feeling that coursing of energy through the body. And it was slightly unpleasant, but the mind was really kind of freaked out about it. But exploring the various layers of it, it's like, oh, you know, actually, the physical sense of this isn't that unpleasant. But then I recognized there was a moment of being, okay, yep, that physical sense, that's okay. But then there was this surging of a feeling of, I don't have control over this. That was really unpleasant. That mind that says, I don't have control, is one of the most unpleasant things, I think, that we, that's one of the big ways we react. So that there's the feelings, and then what is it that we're actually reacting to? In that case, with that energetic experience, it wasn't actually the physical, bodily, energetic experience that the mind was reacting to. It was reacting to feeling like it was out of control. So there's this huge interplay between our mental landscape, our ideas, our thoughts, our views, and our feeling. And I would say thoughts, views, and ideas are a leading cause of feeling tone. Much of what we, in fact, even in the physical realm, what we think of as physical feeling tone results from some perspective or view or idea. An example of this. This was in my own practice a really clear example of how a perception, a view, creates a feeling tone. So it was nighttime. I was having trouble sleeping one night, and so in that situation, I often just get into my meditation posture and meditate, and so that's what I was doing that night. It was, 2, 3 in the morning, something like that. And so I was meditating in the middle of the night, and I started hearing a sound, a very quiet sound, a tapping sound, just a. And the immediate response to that, just like unpleasant. So there was the sound, and my mind recognized, yep, okay, that's unpleasant. I did not question that the unpleasantness was inherent in the sound. That's kind of, and I think that's a lot of what we interpret. We interpret our feeling, the feeling of experience as somehow being inherent in the experience itself. And that's what was happening in my meditation. I noticed the sound, and I noticed that it was experienced as unpleasant. So I noticed that. And then it stopped, continued meditating, and it kept coming back over, over time. It kept coming back. And I noticed the unpleasantness. And at some point I began noticing with that unpleasant sound, there was a contraction in the body. It's like as soon as the sound happened, there was a kind of a tightening in the body. That was unpleasant. That tightening in the body was unpleasant. So I noticed that too. I was kind of doing a feeling tone exploration, noticing the unpleasantness there. And then it kept going. This was over the course of probably half an hour or something. And a little while later, as that sound arose, the tapping sound arose, and the contraction arose, I noticed a subtle flash of fear. And that was definitely unpleasant, the flash of fear. And when that fear had been revealed or unmasked, that fear had previously been below the level of conscious awareness. When that fear became consciously present in my mind, I recognized that the tapping sound itself was neutral or kind of even pleasant. It was just this quiet little tapping. And so the sound itself was not unpleasant, but it had been attributed as being unpleasant because of that flash of fear. This happens a lot to us. And so an exploration, a really helpful exploration, is to look at in our feeling tone. We see, like in that case, it's like I attributed the feeling tone to the sound itself. And yet further exploration revealed that the feeling tone was about the mind. The feeling tone is about a mental reaction. So this kind of exploration around what is it that we're actually responding to? So much of our reactivity leaps off of not necessarily a physical feeling, but an idea, a view, an emotion around a physical feeling. I have a lot of stories around this, but I don't have time to tell them all, so I'm going to move on and just explore a little bit more around this relationship to the other aggregates. So hopefully you've gotten the sense in some of the stories I've told about how interrelated our views, our perceptions, like the fear and tapping story, when I think back on it, I think what was the fear about? It's just a little tapping. And I think my mind probably created this image of like, there's like a rat in the wall. And like, what if there's a hole and the rat comes in here? Just this subtle like sense of a story in the mind. So that can be like right on the surface. It's like, those kind of views or ideas or opinions, or they can be constructed in a moment. It's like, I don't have like a long history of like having rats in my wall and being terrorized by rats. It's just like, you know, that just came up in the moment. And yet there are cultural conditions that we carry around with us and aren't aware of. In that moment, I became aware of the conditioning of, you know, just the conditioning in that moment of fear leading to the feeling of this sound being unpleasant. But so much of our views come from our culture, from deep conditioning. And, one example, when I was in the Peace Corps, I was in a country in Melanesia, in the South Pacific, and the country is Vanuatu, and the people there are called Nivanuatu, and they're descendant, they're in the same, kind of descended from the Aboriginal Australians. They have very dark skin tone. And while I was there, for the 2 years that I was there, I had a close relationship with a family on this island where they hadn't had too many white people on that island. And so one of my sisters in my family had a little girl while I was there. And, I got to visit them every, 6 months or something. So the little girl had been born and they had named her after me. She was my namesake. And so I went to visit Andrea. I went to visit my namesake. And she saw me and she burst into tears. And I can only imagine, it's like every face Andrea had looked at prior to seeing mine had this beautiful, deep, rich brown color to it. And, looking at me must have been like looking at some abnormality, they said, they said, yes, they're all the babies are afraid of white people. And, this is at a very deep cultural conditioning level, what we see over and over again in the first few months of our life conditions us to, this is a normal face. And anything else becomes a little bit of a startle. This underlies so much of our pain in our society right now. This response to skin color, quick reaction based on skin color. And it is conditioned. So mindfulness can help us to see this as conditioned. Not as this is a normal response, but this is a conditioned response. No, not that this is the way it has to be, but this it is conditioned. Another cultural conditioning, just thinking about how you might feel seeing two people of the same gender kissing. That too is culturally conditioned, whether you would experience that as pleasant or unpleasant. It's deeply held views that we've been conditioned with that lead to our feeling, this is pleasant, this is unpleasant. The little Andrea seeing me was an unpleasant experience. It's like, this is not normal. This is not a normal face. That was experienced unpleasantness. So this is a way that views, at a very deep level, views can condition how we feel about things we see, things we hear, things we smell, things we taste. things we think. And perception also influences feeling tone. The kind of classic example around this, it's like you walk into a dim room and there's a coil in the corner, and immediately it's like snake, and it's like unpleasant, oh, fear, you know, it's like phew, there it is. And then you recognize it's a rope. And phew, the unpleasantness shifts. It's just neutral. It's just a rope. That's a perception. It's a process of perception. The dim light is conditions where the accurate perceiving of that experience, it's misperceived. And because of a misperception, there is a feeling. There's a feeling tone associated with that perception. So it's really, really helpful to explore feeling tone and to begin to explore the layers associated with feeling tone. So the first place to begin is to just get familiar with feeling tone. And then, as in my exploration of the tapping, to begin to recognize, okay, well, what I'm associating here, at first, I mean, I was just, you know, I didn't even question that the tapping was unpleasant. But the further exploration of experience in the moment taught me so much about where feeling comes from and how feeling is experienced. This is part of the understanding of the process nature of feeling. And so I think I'll end or like have the last piece of exploration around this be looking at the place of Vedana, a feeling tone, as it relates to our practice. And this is a big topic, and I'll just touch on it a little bit. And yesterday, Gil was talking about how helpful it can be to connect with the pleasantness of the breath, and that it's okay. It's okay when the breath is pleasant. And in fact, that can be a support for us to be present. And so we can use the way the mind appreciates pleasant experience, wanting to connect to pleasant experience, to cultivate the mindfulness. There's a number of ways in which pleasant experience comes as we practice. Throughout our path, the Buddha kind of laid out, the Buddhist teachings lay out a kind of a gradual training leading from generosity through to ethical conduct and then mental cultivation. And at all stages on the path, pleasantness is a part of the process, a part of what unfolds. And so as we explore generosity, we see the pleasure of giving, the joy of offering something. We see the pleasure of behaving in a way that creates no harm. We feel the bliss of blamelessness, as sometimes it's called, when we really connect with our ethical, when we appreciate our ethical conduct, there's a sense of blissfulness that comes with that. A pleasure comes with that recognition. There's the pleasure of concentration itself that comes as the mind settles down and stops kind of going out after trying to fix and change and control. When we stop chasing after having pleasant and getting rid of unpleasant, paradoxically, the experience becomes pleasant in a different way. And concentration itself has a pleasant, many levels and layers of pleasant feeling to the concentration. And then there's the pleasure of insight, which Gil kind of pointed to yesterday. He said, you know, even when something's unpleasant, there can be a kind of a joy just in the being able to meet it. So there's a there around insight, around the ability to open to our experience, there's also comes joy and happiness and delight. And so at all stages of the path, pleasant experience can come. And we can cling to it. That kind of pleasantness is, we're not immune to clinging to that too, and the mind will cling to pleasantness wherever it finds it. And so we also have to recognize that possibility. And so we open to the pleasantness of the path and recognize whether we're inclined to cling to it. We are inclined to cling to it. And so to not like beat ourselves up about that, but again, it's like, okay, that too is part of the path now. Can I open to that clinging? In fact, sometimes the clinging around the pleasure on the path has a really good feedback loop, because often when we start to cling to the pleasure of concentration, it will go away. So it's a great kind of pleasure, because the less we cling to it, the more we get to live there. And the pleasantness of the path gets more and more subtle in ways, more and more refined. In some ways, the whole of the path can be seen as a deepening understanding of pleasure, the happiness of non-clinging, of non-suffering, sometimes called Mahasukha, the great happiness, the great. And sukha is also the word used to mean pleasant. So let's sit for a moment.